number three as I come to you from the T-Mobile Arena, getting ready for the Kings and the Lakers. Doug Christie back in Sacramento. We're going to talk NFL right now with Ephraim Salaam, Fox Sports NFL analyst. Ephraim, this is Grant Napier, and again, I'm with Doug Christie. How are you today?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I guess the folks down in San Diego aren't doing good for a variety of reasons. They don't know about the future of their team, and they can't hold on to a lead. And there's a lot of talk about Mike McCoy coaching this game for his future tonight. Give me your thoughts on that.
Well, number one, I've never seen a team self-destruct in so many games in one season, so early in the season. I can't even believe. It was so funny. 2 weeks ago, we were looking at them play, and I was like, man, it'd be crazy. When they were up by 13 points with 7 minutes left to go in the game, and I was like, it'd be crazy if they, oh, my God, it's happening as we're talking about it. So, you know, whenever you have a situation like that, obviously the team is not prepared to win. So that falls on the shoulders of the coach. And, you know, we know Phillip Rivers is not going anywhere, so – it doesn't bode well for the coaching staff. Maybe we don't even get to the end of the season. Now, that's the crazy part. Like, they've been losing in ways where it's almost impossible to lose. And I cannot wrap my head around it.
You know, Ephraim, Grant has talked about this a couple of times. I was going to ask a different question, but I have to get your take on it. Last week, McCoy goes for a field goal instead of going for it on 4th-and-1. What does that do in the locker room, my friend?
It validates the fact that he doesn't trust us on the player's part, but as an owner on the ownership side, it's like, hey, is this the guy we want making real game time decisions? Is this a guy who's willing to put it all out on the line to get a win? We've seen the opposite side of that with Jack Del Rio and the Raiders, what they did in New Orleans early in the year when he went for two to solidify the game instead of going for the tie. Like that right there, that'll create longevity, but that'll also create trust within the organization and within the locker room, and the Chargers just don't have it right now.
Yeah, you just talked about the Raiders, and obviously they're off to a super start, but yet their defense still has not really played that well. You know, we just talked about the San Diego game. Again, they've given up big chunks of yardage. Again, the bright spot is they've only lost one game. When you look at this Raiders team, are you concerned about them defensively?
Defensively, of course. But whenever you have an emerging star like Derek Carr, and an offense, or those offensive weapons that he has, you can always outscore, right? When you have the ability to put points on the board, you can cover up for some of your defensive, lackluster play, your defensive deficiencies. So as long as that offense is clicking, they'll be able to be in games. And with the coaching decisions like Jack Del Rio's made early in the season, they'll be able to be in position to win those games. The defense will eventually begin to catch up with the offense. As long as, like, if you don't have a good defense and no offense, then you're in trouble because you're always playing from behind. But as long as you can put up points on the board, the emergence of Crabtree again, where has this guy been for the last couple of years? He's back to, you know, what he was when he first came to the league with the Niners. So as long as you have that emerging quarterback with that offense putting up points, I think they'll be all right. The defense, it'll take some time for them to catch up to the offense, but once they do, because we know they have the personnel, they'll be a formidable team making a playoff run.
Ephraim, in New England, the cyborg Tom Brady is back. So the fact that he is back on the field, what does that do now for Garoppolo? Do they look to trade him because Tom's getting older, but it doesn't look like he's getting older? They're kind of in a pickle there. What do they do with a guy like him?
Well, Tom is 40, or will be, for once you're 39 and you're 40. So Tom is 40, and I don't care how good. We saw what Peyton Manning looked like 2 years ago or a year ago, right? And then we saw what he looked like last year. But once you get to a certain age, no matter how good you were the previous year, we saw with Brett Favre. Remember that year he had in Minnesota when they were unbelievable, his best year ever? And then the next year, we didn't know who that man was. that's the type of situation you get into with older quarterbacks who were great. So if I'm New England and I don't see Belichick, you know, straying away from this, here's my bet. I'm going to bet on the future of Garoppolo because he will be the face of the franchise going forward. They don't have another option, another choice. So why would you hit your bet on an old Tom Brady? He's still playing flawlessly and dynamic, but for the long run, he won't be that way for the next 2-3 years. So I play Garoppolo without even questioning.
Ephraim, the saying is, that's why you play the game. And I look at the Carolina Panthers, and this is a team that went 15-1 and went to the Super Bowl, and they have pretty much the same personnel, but, you know, and yet they're 1-4. How on earth do you explain that?
You know what? I was watching last year when I was watching the Super Bowl, and then I was watching some of the players from the Carolina Panthers afterwards, and they had this kind of, you know, this aura about them, like, that's all right. It's going to be payback next year. We're going to get them next year. Now, I remember saying, I was on air, and I said, hey, the funny thing about that is these guys don't even realize that this may be the first and only time they'll ever be able to play in a Super Bowl. You know, you never get that while you're in it when you have such a season like that, but you never feel like, okay, this is it. My rookie year, I got drafted to Atlanta, end up starting. We go 14-2 all the way to the Super Bowl. We get smoked by the Denver Broncos in Super Bowl 33. In my mind, I'm like, don't worry about it. We're going to be there next year and the year after that. I haven't sniffed a Super Bowl since. So I went the rest of my 12 years in the league after my first year and not even come close to the Super Bowl. And they're starting to realize that now. No matter if you have the same team or not, things just don't line up like that for you the next year. They didn't have a powerhouse team in terms of a dynasty, even though they had a lot of young pieces. So now they're finding themselves in a position where they probably won't even win the division or make a wild card spot.
Wow. Ephraim, going from that team that was in the Super Bowl to Denver, I have a question for you about Trevor Siemian. Now, he's out with the shoulder. They're bringing him back. Are they bringing him back too soon? Because if he gets hurt again, you're possibly maybe not seeing him for 3 or 4 weeks. And with teams like the Raiders and different teams that are playing well, is this a big risk for the Broncos?
It is a big risk. And they're panicking a little bit because they figured their defense was good enough to just plug in anybody at quarterback. And we all thought that. I even said that. I said, hell, I can go back and play quarterback for the Denver Broncos where that defense is playing. But the defense got scorched last week. But bless his heart, Paxton Lynch just was not ready for that stage. So now the pressure's on Trevor Siemian to come back and put some stability back on the offensive side of the ball. The problem is, if he does get hurt, they are in trouble because you look at the Raiders and what they're doing. They're in poised position to really take over that division if Denver can't sort its quarterback situation out in terms of health. And they're a little nervous. They weren't able to run the ball like Gary Kubiak wanted to last week. So now you're looking at things like, okay, we need Trevor in there. We need to be able to throw the ball down the field. We need to play action to work a little bit better. So it's a little nervousness going on right now in the locker room.
You know, you mentioned the Raiders, and they're playing the Chiefs this week, and the Chiefs coming off a bye. They're 2-2, and if you remember, you know, the Chiefs got off to that dismal start last year, and then they win 10 in a row. When you look at the Chiefs, you just talked Raiders, you talked Broncos. Do you not think they're going to be standing at the end with a chance to win the division?
Well, they're kind of like, when I look at the Chiefs every year, it's like, either they start off hot, they start off 5-0, or they start off 1-5. You just never know. You know, Andy Reid is a great coach. He's savvy. Alex Smith is, you know, he is a steady quarterback, not great, not terrible. And you just never know. If Jamal Charles can come back and give them a spark offensively, then, yes, they do have those pass rushers. They do have that defense, and they're always formidable at home. You'll have to remember, it's extremely difficult to go up there and play in Kansas City. So they're always in it. You never want to count them in, and you never want to count them out.
What was it? You know, I always hear that from players in the NFL, how difficult, you know, it was to play in Kansas City. And what made that place so difficult to play?
Well, because normally outdoor stadiums aren't that loud, right? So you usually get the loud, like Minnesota is loud and Indianapolis is loud. Those domes are really loud. But let me tell you this. Playing up in Kansas City, it is deafening. And I am talking about deafening. There's a reason Derek Thomas was coming off that end, giving people havoc. It's so hard to concentrate on, you know, the things you need to do offensively in terms of communication when it gets that loud. And plus, it could be windy, it could be cold, loud. All of that turns into a terrible work environment for an offense.
Well, it is 5:12. Time to go solar with Sierra Pacific. Call now for $500 off, 800-551-3040. Here with Ephraim Salaam, Fox Sports analyst. I got a question for you about tonight's game. So the Chargers, you know, they were going through what they were going through with Joey Bosa. But last week, 2 sacks, 3 tackles for a loss. What is the upside for this young man?
Well, the upside is, thank God he's on the field and he's productive, because it was about to be all hell.
Right.
About to be all hell is about to break loose because of all the
right.
And his people did in the offseason. Like, he was talking to, like, you know, he was J.J. Watt already. Like,
uh-huh.
The type of, you know, the deals they wanted and the response, he wants all his money now and all of that. And I was just saying to myself, look, young man, you got it wrong. You got to get in and show him you belong before. Obviously, last week he came, made his debut, showed everyone that he's the real deal. So now what he has to do is he has to build on that. He could have an outstanding career, or he could fizzle out after, you know, 1 or 2 good games. We could have chalked that up to just excitement.
Yep.
And you know, in game time adrenaline. We have to see how he plays the rest of the season. Now, this is great for San Diego because they needed any type of help that they can get. And even with this phenomenal game, they still found a way to lose the game last week.
Boy, no kidding. They sure did. Ephraim, great stuff. We really appreciate the time. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. And Doug, whenever you want to talk about NBA, man, y'all let me know. I do that too.
Woo, I like that for sure.
Good stuff, man. Appreciate it. Gotta love that, huh, Doug? You got a guy can talk football, but he, next time he wants to talk NBA, we'll take him up on that,
yes,
won't we, buddy?
Yes, we will, my friend. By
right?
all means, we're gonna test his knowledge.
Yeah, you know, I should have asked him before he went off who's his team, you know, because if his team is the team that, you know, plays down in L.A.,
yeah, that wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Call him back. We need to know.
That is beautiful. If you want to get in on the program, you can at 339-1140. That's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Again, the game down in San Diego, it's going to be starting momentarily. And, yeah, you got the baseball game underway in Washington. The winner will go on and take on the Chicago Cubs. Meanwhile, Toronto and Cleveland will get going game one of their set tomorrow. And, boy, the Toronto, did they just make Texas look awful? I mean, we know that they have a potent lineup. We know their lineup is dangerous. I did not think that the Toronto Blue Jays would be able to do that the way they did to Texas, the number one seed in the American League. They just destroyed them.
Look, Grant, after the game they were interviewing, I'm not sure which player it was, and he just point blank said, you know, we really expected to play better than we play. I mean, you could tell he was just floored. He didn't believe it. I mean, they came out and absolutely spanked them. And, you know, the thing with Odor and Batista, I think that, you know, that gave a little spark to Toronto. They wanted to send a message, and boy, did they ever.
Boy, they sure did. So game one of the ALCS coming up tomorrow, and then they'll get underway at Wrigley this weekend. Just I wonder what the atmosphere, well, I already know what the atmosphere is going to be like, but I just still wonder the ongoing parade, the ongoing celebration, the ongoing people that are in their 80s and 90s that have been Cub fans that have never seen this team win, that are hoping before they say goodbye, you know, they're going to be able to see their beloved Cubs win. I'm just wondering what that scene could possibly be like in the Windy City if the Cubs finally break the drought.
What was the guy's name who messed with the fly ball?
Bartman.
I'm watching it right now on television. As you're saying that, I'm thinking it's one of those things, Grant, where you think something's going to go wrong. But I agree with you because you sold me on it. When that Cub fan caught that home run from Arrieta, I just went, oh, my God, I think Grant is right. Yep. So it is going to be an absolute party in Chicago if they do this.
All right, let's get to Mitch. Hello, Mitch. Mitch, what's going on? Oh, all right. Mark, you're on with Grant Napier. Hi, Mark.
Good afternoon, Grant. Doug, welcome.
Thank you.
You know, somebody called me the other day and asked me, who's this guy going to be with Grant? I said, if they're smart, it'd be Doug Christie, because for some reason you guys have some really good chemistry. And I like what you talk, Doug. You tell it like it is. You don't pull any punches. And I think you're going to be good for the show.
Thank you, sir.
So, real quick, 49ers, Colin Kaepernick. Grant, I can't agree with you more. You know, the talk has been this whole year about Colin Kaepernick not being in shape, not being ready to play the starting quarterback role. And one of the biggest issues was is they didn't want to have to pay him that $27 million guaranteed contract. So now that they restructured his contract, all of a sudden, he's the starting quarterback. But, Doug, if you don't really know the 49ers, believe it or not, Blaine Gabbert is probably much more athletic than Colin Kaepernick is. Colin Kaepernick is fast. He is not quick. And so he's good running east and west, or north and south, but not east and west. So he's going to get beat up. I'll probably venture to guess he'll get sacked about six times in that game this coming Sunday. So, but, you know, I don't see him, you know, I don't see him lasting long throughout the year. And it was kind of funny that, you know, Matt Barrows didn't really talk about Ponder at all being the backup or even coming in. That was kind of funny. He didn't even mention Ponder.
Well, we just were talking about, you know, Kaepernick. We didn't ask the follow-up question, who would be the backup quarterback. But I think I just made the statement. I think that we'll see Christian Ponder playing quarterback for the 49ers before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. And hey, Grant, real quick, you know, you were talking about the Giants the other day. And, you know, obviously they lost. And what actually beat them was their, you know, relief pitching. I think they should have left Matt Moore in there. I don't care how many pitches the guy's thrown. You don't have confidence in, you know, in the bullpen. You sacked Casillas because, you know, he wasn't getting it done. You know.
Well, I didn't like Bruce Bochy's comment in the Chronicle today. And, again, I have the utmost respect for him. I think he's a great manager. But he said, quote, first of all, we care about Matt Moore. I mean, I lost sleep over letting him go that many pitches going for the no-hitter. He came off Tommy John not that long ago. He is human. When you throw 120 pitches in eight innings, in your mind, you think you're done. How does he know in your mind you think you're done? Did they ask Matt Moore? They didn't even ask him. You know, he came off the field in the eighth, and the quote from Dave Righetti was, you're done. How do they know in his mind? You know, they didn't ask him. You know, I don't buy that at all. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I think that they threw in the Dave Righetti situation because they didn't want to put it on you know, Bochy. I told you early on, you know, Bochy is very loyal to his players. You know, and don't forget, those guys have blown 34 saves at relief pitching crew. So, you know, not leaving Matt Moore in, I thought, was a big mistake. What the hell do you have to go? You know, if they lose the game, they got the rest of the year to rest the arms. You know, you got to get that win to get to that next game, and that didn't happen. You know, so and you said yesterday, during your commentary yesterday, you know, you're only as good as your last win. You know, everything else, you know, what have you done for me lately? You know, Bochy, yes, he is a great coach, but, you know, you have to put some of the blame on Bochy in this game.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's get to John. You're on with Grant Napier and Doug Christie. Hi, John.
Hi, Grant. Hi, Doug.
Hey, hey.
I want to talk about Ben McLemore. It's a small sample size, obviously, with the preseason. But with the Lakers, I'm looking at the box scores. And with the Lakers, he shot 30%. With the Warriors, he shot 39%. 0-for-1 with the Lakers from three. 0-for-3 for the Warriors from three. He shot well against Maccabi Hi-Fi, but that's Maccabi Hi-Fi. But I also noticed he tied for most shots with the Lakers. He had the most shots with Warriors, most shots with Maccabi Hi-Fi. I haven't seen any of the games, so My main question is about his shot selection. What does his shot selection look like? Is it good? Is it?
It has been pretty good. It has been pretty good. His shot selection has been pretty good. And, you know, Dave Yeager is more concerned now. He's telling guys, you know, he's looking at plus minus every game, that he's really going by that. When you were on the court, how do we do as a team? More so than what your field goal percentage or is anything. I would say this. I think Ben McLemore's time this year is going to be dependent on his defense, not his offense. In other words, if Ben McLemore plays good defense, I think Dave Yeager will be okay with his offense, you know, kind of being behind. If he doesn't play good defense, I don't think he's going to be part of the rotation. So for me, you know, you're bringing up offense, and I'm not trying to dodge the question, but I don't think that's going to be the determining factor in where and in how much Ben McLemore plays this year. I think the determining factor in how much Ben McLemore plays this year will be based on his defense.
Okay, if I can follow up, for defense, I think, does that relate, maybe this question is for Doug and Grant, but like the basketball IQ, because like, I think I've seen McLemore getting lost on defense sometimes. So maybe he's getting more training, more coaching this year, but is his defense going to, you think that's going to work with him, with playing good defense? I mean, he has the physical ability, but does he have the head for it?
Well, the basketball IQ, I will agree with you. Grant and I have talked about this many times because I'm a McLemore fan, but his basketball IQ is a little bit behind. But I think this year he is going to get coaching, and he is getting it. I saw a teacher when I watched Yeager, and he was teaching the guys. But they're going to, you know, some things you just have to get a feel for the game, and do you stay in position? In position, wherever the ball is on the floor, there is a place that you are supposed to be at, and then there's a feel for it. And Ben has to get that feel and the understanding out there. And I agree with Grant wholeheartedly. Defensively is how Ben's going to get on the floor. The days of him just stroking threes and that being the big thing, if that comes, great. Defense is where it's at.
Yeah, and as far as the feel, he has not had a good feel for the game in his first 3 years, and I think that's alarming because he started almost every game that he's played. And personally, I would think that after 3 years, you should have a pretty good feel. Now, Doug, you played the position, so you would know a lot more than I would, but he started almost every game during his three-year career. I would think that after 3 years of starting in the NBA, that should have been something that's learned already, and I'm not so sure that it has been.
Yeah, it hasn't been totally, Grant, but I'll say one thing. Coaching is big. It just is. There are little things that you need to know and understand. There are things about post-entries, how you can steal a pass, how you can deny, and different things that I see in Ben where he plays defense sometimes as opposed to offensive defense. I want you to be aggressive. Use your athleticism and your body and those things. And I think that hopefully he hasn't learned it in 3 years. I agree with you, Grant, but I think that he will make some strides this year in that area.
And to go one step further, Doug, I remember you telling me, you know, when you came to Sacramento, you were a veteran. You'd been in the league for several years, but you told me how much you learned from Pete Carril.
Yes, I say it all the time. Not until I got to Sacramento did I learn how to play the game of basketball. I was a hooper. I was hooping. But there's a difference to understanding screens, and just like I was saying about the defensive end of the floor, and Ben has to get that education.
Thank you very much for the call. Yeah, go. Anything else?
Well, I just want to let you guys know, I don't know if it's just me, but I hear an echo for you, Grant, not for Doug, but a definite echo for your whatever you say, just FYI.
Hey, okay? Get out of that tunnel, Grant. What are you doing in a tunnel, man? Come on back to the floor, buddy.
I don't know. Hey, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. You're the first person that said that today, so it could be your deal. All right, we'll be right back. Grant Napier and Doug Christie. This is the Grant Napier Show with DC right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. We continue on as I broadcast from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. The Kings and the Lakers tonight. Doug Christie back in studio. Dan Plesac joining us from the MLB Network. They've got you covered throughout the entire postseason. If you want to get the latest up-to-date information and everything that's going on in baseball, make sure you check out the MLB Network. Dan, it's Grant Napier and Doug Christie. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. How you guys doing?
We're doing good. Hey, I want to back up with you and go to what happened the other night at AT&T Park. You know, us being in Northern California, everyone's still talking about it. I hate pitch counts. I do. I also get the fact that Dave Righetti and Bruce Bochy know their pitcher a hell of a lot more than I do. But here's a guy in Matt Moore that had just retired 9 in a row, including striking out the last batter in the eighth. His pitch count, yeah, it's high, relatively speaking, with what we see today is 120. He comes out of the game. coach knows that his bullpen is terrible, and yet, you know, we still see the move. Give me your thoughts on that.
Wow, Grant, that's the million-dollar question. I think that's been the hot topic in baseball right now. And I can understand where Boach was coming from because of this. If a guy like Matt Moore has a track record like Madison Bumgarner, like Lincecum and Kane did 5-6 years ago, that they were good in innings 7, 8, 9, I get it. Now, this is why I think, Grant, he did what he did. If you run Matt Moore back out there and he gives up a hit or he gives up a walk, now you bring a bullpen that you really don't trust already. Now you bring them in with runners on in traffic, and now you put more pressure on them. I think Bochy's thinking was this. I have everybody available out there. There is no way in hell that we should not be able to hold a 3-run lead with the guys that we have out here. I think this is just my personal opinion. The only thing I might have done differently, I would have went a little bit longer with Derek Law because I thought he threw the ball really well down the stretch. I thought he was really good in game 3. And, you know, he gave up a ground ball that was hit between the shift between Crawford and Panic. Just almost a straight-up ground ball to shortstop, and it was an awful quick cook. I thought 2 at-bats really led to the downfall of that inning. The Javi Lopez walk was just, you know, you have to make Anthony Rizzo swing the bat. You have a 3-run lead, and then I thought the 0-2 pitch that Strickland threw to Javi Baez, the base hit for the go-ahead run, Javi Baez would swing at a butterfly if it flew around home plate. anything other than anything on the plate, he could have thrown 3 sliders in a row and bounced them, and I guarantee you that Javi Baez would have swung at one of those 3 that bounced in the dirt. Those two, the walk to Rizzo and the 0-2 base hit, to me, was that entire inning.
Well, Dan, NLDS going on right now, Game 5, Dodgers and Nats. Tell me how much pressure there has to be on Bryce Harper. We're talking NL MVP. He is 3-for-14 right now, 1 RBI and 5 strikeouts in this series. Well, I mean, he's a young stud, man. What type of pressure? I mean, he needs to get over this hump, would you say?
Yeah, Doug. You know what? Something tells me. Now, listen, the Nationals and he have not come out. I've heard neck issues. I've heard shoulder issues, some leg issues. Whatever it is, we have seen anything but the 2015 National League Most Valuable Player. A lot of people think it started in that series in June against the Cubs where Joe Maddon, they walked him, like intentionally walked him the entire series.
Yep.
I don't buy into that. Something has to be physically wrong with a guy. I will tell you this. As a veteran pitcher, when I sit and I watch a game right now and I watch his swing and I see him bailing and opening up, the front hips opening up, his shoulders opening up, anything down and away, he just can't do anything with. He can't hit it, and if he does hit it, he can't hit it with any authority. And pitchers, they're teasing him with fastballs, but they're going right back down and away, down and away. And until he makes an adjustment, Doug, they're going to continue to do that. And he had a couple of good at-bats off of Clayton Kershaw, particularly in that 7th inning in Game 4, that I thought, hey, maybe he's starting to see the ball a little bit better. But I watched his first at-bat tonight against Rich Hill, and he looked as bad as he looked early in the series. So I don't think he's found the answer yet.
Dan, you more surprised, as we're talking with Dan Plesac from the MLB Network, were you more surprised with the way Toronto handled Texas or the way Cleveland swept Boston?
I was shocked that the Indians swept the Red Sox. There were a lot of people, myself included, I thought with like 10 days left in the season, when the Red Sox went up to Toronto, they won 2 out of 3, they came home, they played well against the Yankees, and they basically won the East, and I thought, wow, there's the best team in the AL East, and it might be the best team in the American League. I was stunned, particularly when the Indians, they don't have Carrasco, and they don't have Salazar, 2 of their better pitchers. I didn't think there was any way they would be able to handle the Red Sox, and they did, and they swept them. The Blue Jays sweep of the Rangers didn't surprise me at all. This Toronto Blue Jays team, this was the one team. They to me were the Giants. I thought the Giants, the NL had to worry about the Giants because they let the Giants in. The Giants wobbled to the stretch. They got in, and I'm going to tell you what, if they would have won that Game 4 and forced a Game 5 at Wrigley, there would have been millions of people in Chicago that have been sweating bullets because I don't think they want any part of Johnny Cueto, and Matt Bell would have been lurking in that bullpen. And so, I think the same way with the Blue Jays. I think right now that the Toronto Blue Jays might be the best team of all the teams left in the postseason because, they're finally starting to hit. They hit in pockets this year. Encarnacion was really the only guy that hit all year long. Bautista was up and down. Donaldson was hot. Then he got hurt. Now he's swinging the bat good again. Tulowitzki was quiet. Now he's hot. That lineup is starting to hit. If they hit, they're going to be awfully tough for the – I think this. The Indians are throwing their best guy in game one in Corey Kluber. If Kluber doesn't win game one, I think it's a short series.
I agree.
And the Blue Jays win it in five.
Spot on.
Well, Dan, the ALCS, you just took my fire. That was my next question. So I'm going to go to a reality radio question right now. Watching Rich Hill, in the top of the first, he took a line drive off of his throwing wrist. How do you monitor that? Because a guy, Grant said this earlier, if a guy is you questioning, do you want to play? He's going to tell you, yeah, I'm ready to go. How do you know when to pull a guy like that after something like that?
Well, you know what? I thought it was pretty unique, and that's a great point, Doug, because the next hitter that he faced, he went to the curveball exclusively to Bryce Harper, and he pitched Bryce Harper really well. He's into the bottom of the second inning right now, and he looks good. He looks like he's throwing the ball well, but this is the dilemma if you're Dave Roberts. Man, you've got Urias over there in the bullpen right now. I don't think they're going to be very patient with Rich Hill. The only thing that concerns me with Rich Hill, you go back to that game he threw, it just sometimes the emotions get the best of Rich Hill. And if he can keep his emotions in check, he's going to be okay. But so far, he looks pretty good going into the second inning.
Dan Plesac from the MLB Network. I wanted to ask you about your colleague. He's a very good friend of our show. I've known Bernsie personally for over 10 years. I'm not a proponent of what he wants to do with having balls and strikes automated. I think that would hurt the beauty of the game. You pitched in the bigs for, almost 20 years, for crying out loud. What's your opinion on this?
You know, I'm much more open to it than I was. First of all, I'm not sure of how the mechanics of it is going to work. Now, he did a special on Real Sports with Brian Gumbel.
Yeah, yep.
And I will say this. The players that played in the game, when they interviewed them afterwards, they seemed like the game just went on like a normal game. There's part of it is that strike zone, like as the ball crosses the plate. People debate this now. Like you see that box when you're watching a game that in that strike zone, games on ESPN
sure.
or MLB or on TBS or Turner. But that box doesn't really have any depth perception. Like as a pitch crosses home plate, you know, it's going to dip down a little bit below the knees. I'm not sure what the perfect solution is, but I just hate to get to a point where everything in every sport is so damn robotic.
Amen.
You know what I mean? Like,
amen.
You just get to where, like, you know, replay's good, but it's like every 30 seconds you watch a football game, there's a replay. And it's just come on. You know, the only thing I'd like to see done, this is what I'm steadfast. I can't understand why baseball, they have to do something with an umpire umping home plate on a check swing. They're going to have to implement a rule where they ask the first or the third base umpire for help. There's no way you could tell if it's a ball or a strike and read if it was a swing or not.
It's impossible.
Absolutely. I've
talked to umpires about this. They say that when they're at first or third base, that is the most difficult call to make. You know, an instantaneous did the bat go around? Where did it go? Blah blah blah. That is a really difficult call for an umpire. And I'm with you. I'd be okay in that instance. You know, on a strike three. You know, I'd be okay with replay in that situation. I really would.
And I think you'll see hitters. Like on a swing that's really close or debatable, if they ask the first or third base umpire, most of the times the guys will just go okay and walk back to the dugout. I think, and it would irritate me, and I was a pitcher. It would irritate me if a hitter, like what happened with Yasiel Puig in game two, that wasn't a swing, and you know all of a sudden
good
it's
point.
Strike three,
right.
And all of a sudden Dustin Pedroia, he didn't think he swung, he's walking off the field in the ninth inning of a game,
right.
And you could see it on a replay. He swung. The bat almost, if he would have made contact, he would have hit a double.
It wasn't even close, actually. And, right. You know, and to his credit, I would say this, for the folks that don't know what we're talking about, you know, in the recent playoffs, Pedroia ended the game. The ball got away from the catcher. He ran the first. He was thrown out. He argued with the first base umpire. And then after the game, he said, hey, you know what? I'm wrong, and I'm actually going to go up and apologize to the ump because I was wrong. And I give him credit for, you know, at least understanding that, you know, it was the heat of the moment. He was wrong, and he went back and apologized. I give him credit for doing that.
100%. And, Doug, you know this when you're on the floor. There are times where you think you got fouled and you'll watch it over and you'll say, yeah, and you'll go watch it over and you'll go, ah. And I don't know how many pitches I threw in my 18-year career that, Grant, I walked off the mound and I said that 2-2 pitch was a strike. And I go back after the game and I look at it, you know what? And it's not as good as I thought it was when I threw it.
Hey, Doug, and let me tell you
how many times.
And let me tell you something, Dan. Okay, I'm from New York and I'm a diehard Yankee fan. You know how damn hard it is for me to compliment anything in Boston that I just did with Dustin Pedroia?
Yes, I believe me. I've been working here in New Jersey for 7 years. I do know. Trust me.
That's beautiful.
I'm in a house of Yankee and Met fans. I do know.
That's beautiful. That is good stuff. Doug, you have anything else for Dan?
Actually, I just wanted to comment, Dan, on the automated piece. It's a tough call because, like, when you're sliding into first, you know, or sliding into second, running to first, if it's late, I can see that. But when you talk about the strike zone, that's like John McEnroe with automated tennis now. I miss a little bit of that where you just you guys, I think that goes into people's psyche. You know how the ref is going to call it. He's someone who's high with it, low with it. The strike zone, you can paint the outside corner. I'm not with that one, guys.
I get the whole concept in all the sports now, but it's like we're going to the fifth degree on every single play. I don't know. There's something about the beauty about the human element of it. It's thinking about all of the controversial calls, and some of them I understand. If you're a St. Louis Cardinal fan, you're beside yourself at Don Dankinger at first base on that play against the Kansas City.
Absolutely.
Eagles. I get it, but it's part of it. Right. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
I don't know. I just hope that we don't take the human element away from not just baseball, but all of the other sports. Because for the most part, the referees, the umpires, the linesmen, they're pretty good at what they do.
Well said. Dan, great stuff. We really appreciate you coming on the program.
Anytime. We'll do it again.
Look forward to it. Dan Plesac, good stuff right there from the MLB Network. Grant Napier and Doug Christie, remember, we are getting you right up until Kings basketball as they take on the L.A. Lakers. That means Doug and I will be going right up till 7 o'clock. Hey, it is 5:46, time for the 2016 year-end clearance, Jacuzzi of Sacramento.com, and we'll be back right after this. Napier and Doug Christie continuing on, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Why don't we check in with Mitch? Hello, Mitch. Mitch, what's up?
Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, guys. I was watching two games. I'm listening. I forget. I can't have it.
Hey, Mitch, are you freaking kidding me or what? Are you serious? Mitch, do you want to come on the radio or not? Do you want to talk or not? I call your names twice, then you start talking, then you start again, and you don't even know what you want to talk about. Are you nervous, or is it the dogs bothering you? What's going on, Mitch? Just come on. We'll have a little therapy session here. What's bothering you, buddy?
I was doing multiple things. I'm sorry.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, let's stop doing multiple things. Let's do one thing. Let's talk to Grant and Doug. Go ahead, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Doug.
You got it.
And Grant. And good luck with the show. Congratulations and all. Doug, the Chargers, I have a good fine chance to win tonight and help out the Raiders. I mean, Rivers can go against any defense. They save the coach. They made a good pick. Maybe we save the coach's job at least any year. Bosa's going to be a good linebacker, an excellent linebacker, maybe like Matthews maybe. And if Clay Kaepernick was quarterback in the Chiefs, I would like the Raiders' chance.
Which Kaepernick?
Yes, if Kaepernick was quarterback in the Chiefs on Sunday, I would like the Raiders' chances of winning much better on Sunday.
Hey, let me ask you something, Mitch. What's the name of your dog?
Oh, Cody.
Cody? All right. What'd you do to Cody to make it stop barking so quickly?
I don't know. If I just
give it a treat? Should I throw a treat at it, Mitch?
You know, he's not a tough dude. He's just a hyper dog.
Hyper dog. I got even better.
Well, the master
question.
Sure as hell ain't hyper. I can tell you that.
Hey, Mitch, is your accent from Boston?
No, I'm originally from New York, Staten Island.
There you go. Hey,
that's it.
Come on, Grant. He's a New York guy. You got to give him a break.
Hey, I wish he was as hyper as his dog was. All right, Mitch, have a good one. We'll take it easy. All right. Good Lord. All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Sounds like he's on the Staten Island Ferry down in the boonies underneath the damn hole. I mean, come on, for crying out loud. Help us out here, Mitch. Good Lord.
So, Grant, bottom of the second, two out, two on, first and third. Washington is now up 1-0. I got a question for you. Who is playing right field? Because it didn't look like Yasiel Puig, because he could have gunned the guy down coming home. That was Murphy.
Yeah, I don't have the box score in front of me, so I can't answer that. I don't know.
Oh, man.
All right, if you want to call the show, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Let's see. In right field is Reddick. So Reddick. Josh Reddick is playing right field. Puig is currently not in the lineup.
Bad choice. He would have gunned him down.
Well, you know what? Hey, it's early. You know what I mean? It's early.
No,
but and then we got football we're going to talk about. We've got the Kings. We got Ken Korak is here. He is the voice of the Oakland A's. He just came up and said hello. And he's going to be joining us courtside at 6:15. So we'll talk some baseball with Ken Korak. We've got a lot of things going on. Your phone calls. If you don't have the energy above Mitch, don't call. All right. If you cannot come up with a little bit of oomph and a little bit of energy, if you have the lackluster passion, the lackluster energy as Mitch did, don't call the show. All right. All right. We can't handle it. Let's see if Jordan's got some energy. Jordan, go ahead.
How's it going, guys?
Good. You're off to a good start. What's up, Jordan?
So I'm calling about the Kings. You know, I'm a big Kings fan, right? So I want to know, like, what is your thoughts on, like, I guess, what's, like, their ceiling, this shit with them, like, you know, being a new team and all the hype that you have with being a new team, a new arena. what do you think that is their peak this season, like, that they can do with Cousins being there and Gase still being, you know, doing his thing as a scorer? Like, what are your thoughts on the Kings?
I don't know what their peak would be, but if you told me right now, if you said, would I take a 500 season, I would take it in a heartbeat. I wouldn't even think about it.
I agree with you, Grant. I would say I agree. Peak, you don't know. But 41-41, I think, would be absolutely fantastic.
Yep.
That would be quite a bit of growth for the Kings.
So are they a playoff team or no? What do you think?
I don't think 41 in the West gets you in, personally.
I don't either. You look at the West, there are many teams. Grant and I went through it yesterday, and we counted, I think it was only three or four teams that we absolutely counted out. So it's going to be a tough go for the Kings.
I mean, personally, the only
Cousins?
Two teams – go ahead.
And Cousins, do you think – is he going to be maybe like a top five MVP candidate, you think, this year or no? Because every year he keeps getting better and better with the boards, and he's passing better every year. He can score for sure, but my main thing with him is, like, you know, his overall game is getting better every year.
Well, he's got to play more games. I mean, he's not going to be a top five MVP candidate if he plays 59 games and 65 games. So, I mean, he's got to stay on the floor. In my opinion, I want to see him play 75 or more games this year. You can't be in that category if you're missing, you know, 23 games and then you're missing 17 games. You know, you can't do it. So, you know, the last 2 years he's played 59 and 65 games respectively. That's not going to get it done. He's got to be on the floor. If this team is going to get to 41-41, it's my opinion he's got to play a minimum of 75 games.
And I would agree with Grant there. Now, you know, Grant's tough sometimes. He's old school. I am a little bit too. But he is a top five talent, no doubt. But what Grant is saying is to really put yourself into that sphere, you have to dominate and play a lot of games. Because as a top five talent, if he plays 75 games the way he is dominant, you probably could get 41 wins out of it.
Yeah, see, I don't think he's a top five talent. And the reason why I say that is if you told me could take any five players in the NBA, I wouldn't have him on my top five. Now, that doesn't mean he's not an all-star. It doesn't mean that he's not very good. But he's not a top five player in the NBA.
I mean, top five, top ten.
No.
You get what I'm saying, Grant?
Yeah, but no. But there's a big difference between the top.
No, there is.
There's
he's
a
right.
big difference between the top five and the top ten. There's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, Well, I mean, for his age and for what he can do now, I think he's top five. I mean,
he's not top five. He's not. There's no way you can sit there and objectively say he's top five. He's not top five. I mean, come on now. He has. He doesn't play good enough defense in his career to be top five. He's missed too many games to be top five. I mean, all of these things. If you're saying top five, you're talking about the very, very elite of the NBA. Okay, we're talking about the elite of the elite. Now, hey, I voted him the last 2 years among the top 15 players. 2 years ago, I voted for him second All-NBA team. That puts him in the top 10. Last year, I put him top in the third because I thought he played better the year before. So, I mean, I recognize that he's a hell of a talent. I mean, I'm not sitting here saying he's chopped liver. I'm not sitting here saying that he's not good. He's a deserving All-Star, and he will be on the All-Star team this year, barring injury. But he's not top five. I mean, we got to be fair about this.
Well, I think my thoughts is more like his team is kind of like, it's not like they don't give him like that help. He's kind of like carrying the team whenever he can to win. It's kind of like they're more of a, like, hindrance on him being like a great player. Like all these players that are like the top five, like Curry's and LeBron, they have some players around them at least that can kind of like, you know, show and kind of give him that help. You know, Cousins to be like top five, you think if he makes the playoffs, as the Kings make the playoffs, if that happens, will they be top five, you think?
Go ahead, Grant.
No, I'm going to, Doug, I don't mean to keep on, but I want to make my point here.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm only going by what I've seen. I'm not predicting the future here. I mean, could he be? And we have to go to the break. So, Doug, let's pick this up when we come back. All right, let's continue this conversation. This is Sports 1140 KHDK.